The RTE Rugby Podcast.
And you're very welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. Hugh Cahill here. We're going to speak to Michael Swift and Donal Lennon over the course of the next 35 minutes or so. We're also going to hear from Jonathan Sexton and Munster coach Razi Rasmus after what was a pretty difficult weekend overall for the Promises in the Rugby Champions Cup. As always, plenty to talk about, and we're building up ahead to the Guinness Pro 12 action this weekend, which is all the Irish provinces have to play for. Leinster, of course, already securing a home semi-final. Munster in good shape as well, but Ulster, massive weekend for them as they take on the Ospreys, which we'll come to a little bit later on. But before we get into that, let's have a listen to Jonathan Sexton. He's been speaking to Claire McNamara after what was a pretty difficult defeat against Clermont Auvergne in Lyon.
It's always tough to take a loss. It's worse, obviously, when it's a semi-final. You're so close to getting to where you wanted to get to. We just got to learn from it now and be better for it and take the experiences out of it to do well in the league for the rest of the season and to take it into Europe next year.
Overall, do you think you were the better team that you might have just gotten across the line? Obviously, you gave them that big lead at the start.
It's hard to know. Look, they obviously took their chances at the start, and then when I went to look at the video, I thought we would have defended really poorly, but we just made a couple of errors. We'd actually defended really well in the first half, apart from, like I said, two small errors, and they capitalised on it. So it's I suppose we wish we could go back and start the game again, and but you don't get that luxury in professional sport, and like I said, we got to learn from it. There are the small margins that exist when you get to the top.
I think you will take a lot of positive out of it because it is largely a young team.
Yeah, largely a young team. We know we're playing against a very good team as well. Clermont's a team that have blown away all the teams in their pool, and Toulon in the quarterfinals. So they'll take some stopping. Obviously, Saracens are an outstanding team as well. So we were up against a very good team, but like I said, you can't sort of start the game the way we did and get away with it. So like I said, we've got to learn from it.
You've still got, obviously, Pro 12 silverware to chase. How hard is it now to refocus and to put your energies towards that?
It's not that hard at all to refocus because we want to come away, desperately want to come away with something from this season. We've worked extremely hard, and even the effort on Sunday was outstanding from everyone. We desperately want to come away with a medal this year and to show something for how far we've come in a year. Like I said, we're hungry to get going. We've turned the page now, and we'll be ready to go this Friday.
Well placed. Obviously, you've got the home semi-final to look forward to.
Yeah, we've got a couple of obviously league games to go first. We know that we've got that home semi-final to look forward to, but it's important that we keep our form and keep performing, and we're going to have obviously a big crowd this Friday night. Then we've got an Irish derby, which you want to win anyway, and then obviously into the semi-final. So a lot to play for.
It's been a really busy couple of weeks on so many fronts. How hard is it to keep up that energy and to keep up that focus?
Yeah, last week was I think a big distraction as well during that week, with the Lions being announced. So there was a lot going on as well there last week that we had to sort of refocus. So and over the next few weeks there'll be distractions as well. Just got to focus the mind now to what's towards the end of the season. And like I said, we're desperate to finish on a high.
Talking about the Lions, how much thought have you given to that, or have you allowed yourself to think about that?
Well, you're allowed to think about it now. You've been selected. It was always in the back of the mind over the last year, 2 years even. It's that big that it's hard not to think about. And now that you've been selected, it's a great honour and a dream to be selected again. And looking forward to it. But like I said, there's a lot of rugby to be played before then. We've got four games left, with if we can get that final. So a lot of rugby to play beforehand.
And Mike Ross, your teammate, announced he's hanging up his boots at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think obviously Mike's close friends have known for a few weeks now that he's gone, so it's not, I suppose, news to me. Still very sad to see a guy finish up, and someone that's given so much to Leinster. It's amazing to think he only came to Leinster when he was 30, and the amount of success he's had, and he's been a cornerstone of that success. Without him, we wouldn't have won the trophies that we have and had the success that we've had. So we'll all be sad to see him go on and off the pitch. He's a very popular member of the squad, and we'll miss him greatly, but he's taken a great role in mentoring guys like Tyke Furlong and his performances, and we've got Michael Bent and a lot of other young guys in the academy that are ready to step up, but like I said, it would be really sad to see him go.
Yeah, Johnny Sexton there. And as I said, Michael Swift is with me in studio. Donal Lennon is on the line. And Michael, I'll just start with you if I can. I mean, you could hear it in Johnny Sexton's voice there. And I think most of the squad are going to be feeling massive disappointment because this was one perhaps they will feel got away from them.
Most definitely. I mean, look, if you such a strange game, a great spectacle of rugby. But I mean, you take the first 15 minutes and Leinster, you know, what's going on there? You know, they're
shell-shocked,
line-outs getting overthrown. Break down a mess and you're thinking, God, this is going to be a long day at the office. But typically Leinster, they found something in there and kind of clawed back at half time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, typically Claremont, if you keep at them, they start kind of doubting themselves. And obviously the turning point was obviously the try that was disallowed. And from then, Claremont just got that extra edge and went on to win it.
Yeah, and Donald, you know, we hear this cliche in the game so many times that the first 15 minutes is crucial. But I think it's even more crucial when you're playing against French teams, because if you get them down in the first 10-15 minutes, generally they tend to drop the heads.
Yeah, no doubt about that, and even more so with Claremont Burn. I mean, we all know the history of their failure rate in knockout competition. They were only playing, I think, 2 hours up the road from their home pitch, so obviously they had a huge support there. But Leinster, normally you don't see Leinster starting as poorly as they did there, given the number of experienced players they've had, mm-hmm. A number involved with Ireland in the Six Nations.
So what do you put it down to then?
Well, it's funny. I remember going back to 2009 and that famous Munster-Leinster semi-final in Croke Park, as it was. Munster had, I think, 8 players picked for the Lions on the Wednesday before, or 11 days before that match. Mm-hmm. Now, it's very difficult to say what impact having Leinster with all their Lions named only 3 or 4 days before the game. You just wonder what impact that had mentally. You know, obviously, we don't know what the mental state of the team was going into the match, but it had to have been a distraction for those 48 hours before the game. I think Leinster, they look back on the contest, given the way they worked, they were back into the game. Michael has mentioned the systems failure, if you like, in their lineup, which didn't help in that opening 15 minutes. But I think they'll also rue the fact that when they pulled themselves back into the game in the second half, their discipline left them down. Key moments, gave away penalties that Kemi Lopez or Parra were able to convert, and also not being able to clear their lines and setting up positions for Lopez to drop those 2 outstanding goals. But looking back, there's no doubt that Leinster will have more reason for regrets over the course of the 2 semi-finals.
Okay, so Mike, just give us an idea. Okay, can you think back to games when you played for Connacht where you know in the warm-up something isn't quite as it should be, or maybe you're in the dressing room beforehand and maybe the lads seem a little bit distracted and you just know in the back of your head we're not at the pitch that we need to be at, and you're slightly worried even before kickoff maybe that the attitude isn't quite right or something isn't quite right?
Yeah, it's a strange one, especially from away from home. You're out of your normal environment. You know, even when teams arriving late, we had the issue with in the Six Nations.
Yeah,
and
the boss.
You know, guys are very well true. Now, I'm not sure. I think it was a perfect build-up. And warm-ups, you know, sometimes warm-ups can go really bad and you can play out of your skin. But I just felt the first 15 minutes, you know, they started like, obviously, and that was expected, they were going to start like a 100 miles an hour. Parra was just orchestrating things and pulling the strings at halfback, and those 2 passes were sensational. But Leinster, I suppose, were a little bit narrow, but starting off in a game, you know, if you're not up for there's no question they were up for the game. Mm. And you know, Donald makes a good point of was the Lions' huge mental kind of strain on the guys who were like thankfully selected. So it was just very strange and un-Leinster like, and it took a, you know, if the first 15 minutes for them to, well, probably the first half an hour, for them to actually wake up and go, right, lads, we need to get our fingers out here.
And Donald, sometimes, you know, you just can't put your finger on it. Like, you can hear Johnny Sexton speaking this week and some of the players that came out on Monday and Tuesday in press conferences, they're frustrated because they don't quite understand what it was that made them start as slowly as they did. But this stage of the competition semi-final, you just can't afford it.
Well, that's the problem. You only get one chance, and I think the reason they're so frustrated after the game was because they knew had they not started in the manner that they did, they could well have won the match and been in a final in Edinburgh in a couple of weeks' time. to their credit, it you know, when you start as badly as they did and you're just mentally you're not at the right pitch, at times it's very difficult to drag yourself back into the game. But there's a lot of credit due to Leinster for the fact that they did manage to address the issues that were creating those problems early in the match. They had the winning of the game. I mean, that disallowed try that Mike has alluded to was obviously a huge turning point. I think, it was a penalty. There was also, a suspicion of a forward pass, which may have also forced the assistant referee to bring play back and have a look at the entire incident. But, I think you'd have to think Levy, he knew exactly what he was doing. It did create the hole. And you can see Rougerie, the minute it happened, he's putting his hands up in the air. But look, outside of all that, as I mentioned, there were other incidents, penalties that allowed Claremont back into the game when Leinster had scored typically after that brilliant Gary Ringrose try. I mean, even if they could have kept not have given away any points for a period of 5 or 10 minutes, history would suggest that Claremont would go back into panic mode and Leinster at that stage, given that they were on top, they just had they had the experience on the field to close the game out. But unfortunately, those penalty decisions were proved hugely costly in the end.
And Donal, like, you think back to Leinster's success, you know, when they won the 3 Heineken Cups and kind of dominated for such a long period of time. You think back to Munster as well with the Heineken Cups they had and who they had in the engine. And it's great that I have 2 second rows here to answer this question. Are Leinster missing that kind of a mad dog, really physical powerhouse in the second row? And this is no disrespect at all to Hayden Triggs or even to Devon Toner, but, you know, you think back to it, to Nathan Hines, players like that who came in, Paul O'Connell's, who just were so crucial to success that Munster and Leinster had. Are they missing that, do you think?
I think there is an element of that. I also think Devon Toner had an outstanding season up to a certain point. I think he's gone off the boil a bit, whether just lack of confidence, having been left out of the Irish side for the last game against England. Like, I would have thought he was well in the running for the Lions tour a couple of months ago. And his form has dipped at the wrong time. Personally, I have a lot of time for young Maloney in the second row. He seemed to be making huge strides. But obviously, look, they're picking Triggs for a reason. They're now trying to fill that void by Scott Fardy coming in from Australia. He's played most of his rugby in recent times in the back row, even though I think he is a very good signing. But I think that signing alone would support the view that you're taking.
Yeah, and, you know, Michael, that's the job of a second row. It's to win the line-outs, it's to do the technical stuff, but it's also to be just a physical presence and a powerhouse. And against a team like Claremont Auvergne, you need that.
Definitely. I mean, what we're also forgetting, I suppose, is the impact that Sean O'Brien may have made. And, you know, every team has designated runners, and, you know, you don't get a better one than Sean O'Brien. So I think that was a big factor in trying to break down Claremont, because at the breakdown they were just sensational. They really were. You know, second rows wise, Scott Vardy coming in, he is a kind of back row come second row, and we'll have to wait and see what he can bring to the table. But I think, you know, young Maloney, I think he's captaining Leinster this weekend, which I think is a huge plus for him. And obviously Leo sees something in him if he's given him the armband for the weekend. But he's one for the future.
Yeah, and they have guys like James Ryan as well coming through. He was Irish under 20 captain. He seems to have all the tools to go all the way. But sometimes there is no substitute for that, like, 32, 33-year-old who's just prepared to beat the crap out of whoever's in front of him, basically.
Or the Brad Thorne 45.
Exactly. A Brad Thorne figure, an Aidan Hines figure, that kind of thing. Yeah, no substitute.
And I think Hugh, it's also worth making the point, you know, when Mike is talking about Sean O'Brien, certainly in the lead-up to the game, I always felt that Leinster had a better chance of progressing than Munster. But the fact that Sean O'Brien had to cry off on Thursday, that was a significant difference. You know, especially when you add it to the fact that, you know, Jimmy Heaslip was also missing in that back row. Individually, the likes of Conan Ruddock was outstanding, and Dan Levy. But as a unit, Claremont were certainly more tuned into what they needed to do in that opening half. And, you know, when you look at O'Brien having to drop out along with Heaslip, then you had the Kian Healy incident during the week where he suspended. Rob Kearney was also out. That's 4 British and Irish Lions taken out of a match day squad when you're down to the last 4 in Europe. And I think that had an impact as well.
Okay, well, look, you mentioned Munster, Donald. Let's have a listen to their head coach, Razzy Rasmus, because he was speaking in the aftermath of the defeat to Saracens at the Aviva Stadium. And Michael Corcoran caught up with him.
Yes, a lot of lessons being learned, and I think more lessons being learned, experience that the players went through that hopefully in future will use the experience they felt this weekend. You know, we actually knew that was going to be the storyline, and we're trying to prevent it. And I know Saracens just a class team. They are. I think they made about 100 more tackles than us in the game, and we just couldn't score. So eventually that pressure told, and when they get one or two opportunities, they scored. And the only way you learn is through going through pressure games like that. So lessons learned.
It's important that you're not overly hard on yourselves, if you understand what I mean, because there's still quite a lot of rugby to play before the end of this season.
No, definitely, and I think one saw that with Glasgow. After Glasgow fell out in the and got knocked out in the quarterfinals, you know, then they lost against us, and I think, I'm not sure if they're still in the race for Pro 12 playoff spot. So you can certainly lose your focus and be dejected, but we've always been a very realistic group this year so far, trying to look objectively at the position and you know where we've come from and where we're trying to go. So now we know it's two tough Pro 12 league games. Trying to secure that semi-final, you know, would be great. But first we have to get past two difficult teams in the sense that Treviso has been beating class teams, and especially at home, and then obviously Connacht, so it's tough games. Some of the guys will be rotated. Not that should make us vulnerable, but I think team cohesion and continuity and you know, how quickly can guys click, those kind of things might disrupt us a little bit. But if we stick to our guns, you know, I think it's one of those games where we know it's going to be a hell of a grind, and we're prepared to go and do that.
I know that you're pretty proud of what you've achieved so far. From your point of view, you're at the start of a journey which could be a rather exciting one for not just Razzy Rasmus and Munster, but for everybody, supporters alike.
No, Munster in the whole. Munster as a club and as a province and as, you know, as supporters and for everybody, you know. It's people outside Munster, outside the province who supports us. This is, you know, for Axel, for the past players. I mean, Munster was always up there when I supported them and looked at them and saw them on television. And we try to get up there. We know we're not there yet, but I think that's the future. That's the goal. That's the purpose of this whole thing. Not for one specific person. It's for Munster. So try and get Munster back up there.
Just before we finish, I met you in Johannesburg before you came over here, and you said, you know, you were coming for, I think it was 3 years, and you wanted to leave behind a legacy. I mean, that's still your intention. This is only the first step of it.
I guess a legacy would probably be if a team is consistently competing at Europe and win it every now and then, you know, and win a Pro 12 every now and then. But I think if we can operate as a world-class team, that Munster should be. I think then I wouldn't say it would be my legacy. I think it would be this group and this coaching group and this group's legacy, you know. So we're working hard towards that. We had a little bit of a setback last week against a team that I think if we played them 10 times over in the next week, we'll lose eight or nine times, because you need a little bit of luck. And they're just that much better than us. But that's not dejecting for us, you know. It's telling us where we want to work on.
Yeah, Razzy Rasmus there, speaking to Michael. Look, I suppose, Donald, the overall thing for me this week, looking back on Munster's season, and it's not over yet, and they're very much going to have a say in this Pro 12 title. But overall, if you look at where they have come in the last 6 to 8 months under Razzy Rasmus, and considering how they were last season, it has been a massive, massive improvement. Yes, disappointing to lose out to Saracens, but, you know, no shame in that whatsoever. And actually, Razzy Rasmus now, I think, has a better idea what he needs going forward for the next couple of years.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I think we all felt Saracens were the best team left in the competition. I think it was summed up perfectly when I spoke to a couple of the Munster players after the game, and indeed I saw Billy Holland mentioned it in a piece today, where the Munster players who played against England thought that Saracens were a better side than England were. Now, when you consider that England were going for 19 test wins in a row, I think that tells you everything.
Yeah.
You know, they're just that little bit more cohesive. Obviously, they have a long track record of success over the past few seasons. And the difficulty for Munster was always going to be Saracens were very strong in the areas where Munster are strong. In other words, in the set piece, in the line-out maul, but also in terms of their defence. And if anything, Saracens were even stronger. I mean, they were just so happy to play without the ball. That period of pressure that Munster applied in the opening 25 minutes, they just found it impossible to break them down. So looking back, as you say, I mean, this time last year, Munster were struggling, I think, to beat Edinburgh to qualify as in the last position for Champions Cup rugby. When the draw came out then, and they had, you know, Racing were in there, and
Glasgow.
You know, you just yeah. Exactly. You just felt Leicester, who had beaten them home and away last year. I mean, you just didn't see them getting out of the pool. So I mean, where they've ended up is a huge plus. I also think that Erasmus, when he came in, a lot of the players in the squad he inherited. He has now almost finished the process of, you know, players who have been let go. I've been told that already. He has a couple of younger players lined up to come in. So his stamp is beginning to be put on the squad. And also, I think the fact, even though apparently behind the scenes he did confirm to the players that he was staying, the fact that he's publicly come out after the game and said, look, I'm here next season, I think that's exactly what Munster needed to hear. They are, you know, they are in a semi-final. Hopefully after this weekend, it'll be a home semi-final at the Pro 12. And I think, you know, it'd be a great way for the domestic season to finish here if Munster and Leinster ended up in a Pro 12 final back in Dublin. I mean, you have another huge day out and both teams chasing silverware.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic. And I think that it is massive for Munster that Razzy Erasmus has committed to them, because like the development of the squad. And look, I know people might say that there was this kind of huge hinging point when Axel passed away, and it could have either shattered the squad or galvanised them. It did galvanise them, and it's brilliant that he's staying on.
Most definitely. And, you know, for obvious reasons, this year they've the emotional levels that those guys have been playing on since his passing has been, you know, incredible, and they've just raised the level week in, week out. I think next year, as Donal says, Razzy, after having his first year in, he'll start bringing his own kind of squad in. I think they were looking to develop a little bit more of an open game this year to complement their usual direct physical approach. I think another pre-season under their belts, and I think we will see that develop. And I think Munster have to develop that aspect of the game if they are to compete, because it was glaringly obvious against Saracens that blunt approach
wasn't going to work.
With intensity, aggression, pressure, waiting for the opposition to make, wasn't going to work. So I think it was a stark reminder of where they need to be. Now, obviously, the Saracens are at the top of European rugby at the moment. But I think it bodes well for the future. But as Donal says, this still season could finish on a high. And you know, what a send-off to the end of what's been a really, really hard season for them, both mentally and physically.
Yeah, just very quickly before we leave Munster, Donal, JJ Hanrahan coming back, like a massive fan of his when I watched him in under-20s, and obviously we've been waiting for him to make that breakthrough to the senior ranks. When he left for Northampton, there was a huge amount of disappointment that Munster weren't able to hang on to him. But I heard a recent interview that he gave where he said the plan was always to come back, and it's brilliant now that he is coming back.
Yeah, it is. And again, I think it shows a lot of the players in Ireland, you know, far away hills, you know, they're not as green as you think. Mm. And, you know, he's had an up and down, topsy-turvy 2 years in Northampton. It didn't help. I think he broke his leg earlier on in this season. And, you know, having made huge strides, he's getting very few starts there now. But he's always been a massively talented player, given the career path that he chose. I mean, he was more a Gaelic footballer growing up. At 16 years of age, he chose to go to Rockwell to pursue a rugby career. Did that, came through the Munster Academy, and as we know, is a hugely talented player. So to lose somebody of that ilk at 23 years of age was a big blow to the province. The fact that he's now coming home, I think, is huge. But that whole midfield axis is something that has to be addressed, because you know, you could see the desperation in terms of Munster trying to break down that Saracens defence last weekend. It wasn't helped, by the way, that, you know, that Saracen's ability to close down and to slow Munster's ball at the breakdown, it put the halfbacks under massive pressure. And a lot of the time, Duncan Williams and Tyler Blaindall had no option but to kick. Unfortunately, they kicked to the wrong man in Billy Vunipola. Yeah. But getting JJ Hanrahan back Farrell from Grenoble is somebody that we know. Bernard Jackman has spoken very highly of in the past, so he's also coming in. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I do think they have a decision to be made in terms of, is it Saïli or Tote that's going to be kept on for next year? Personally, I think Saïli offers more in attack. We saw glimpses of it again, but you know, he just hasn't shown the consistency that you'd expect from somebody who's been capped from New Zealand.
Well, when you consider then, on that one then, when you consider the relationship that Tote and Scannell have together, Donal, you know, as a package, they seem to be more in tune, yet Saïli does seem to have more of that X factor. Is that what you're weighing up here?
Exactly. Well, that's, you know, I look at from an attacking perspective, I think Saïli offers more than Tote. But overall, you'd have to say, over the 8 or 9 months of the season, Tote has delivered more key performances. So it's a question of looking at the balance within your squad. If you're looking at ways and means of breaking down the opposition, creating line breaks, because that is the area where Munster are deficient at the moment, then who is going to deliver that for you? I think the bludgeon that Mike was referring to will bring you so far in all competitions, and you know, it served Munster really well this year. But if you're talking about taking that final step and delivering silverware, then you have to have more strings to your bow, and that's something that Erasmus has to weigh up.
Okay, we're going to get into the Pro 12 in just a second, but a word on Mike Ross, Mike, if you don't mind, because he has announced he's retiring at the end of the season. He's been included in the Leinster team to play Glasgow at the RDS this weekend. But, you know, you think back to Mike Ross's career and you think that Ireland were at one stage in a position where we just didn't have an alternative or a replacement for John Hayes. Up steps Mike Ross and all of a sudden our scrum goes from being really vulnerable to actually being rock solid, and he was the platform on which much of the success at set piece was based.
Oh, completely. And you know, if you go looking back in history, and when John Hayes was retiring, there was a huge worry there, because it shows how vital a tight head is in world rugby now. Without a tight head, you just, you know, you can have the best back lines in the world, and it means nothing without a solid scrum. And then it was just perfect timing, and then Rossi comes along, and you know, you've never seen someone who just loves the scrum so much and built his, if he's honest, he built his career on it. You know, he's not the best, most mobile forward, the strongest, the fastest, the best ball carrier. But what he was exceptional at was scrummaging, and you know, chatting to some of the Leinster players about him, methodical research, absolutely making the most of what his skill set was, and fair play to the guy. And, you know, to have reached that many caps for Ireland and his silverware of Leinster, and not forgetting his time in Quinns and before that Munster. So,
yeah,
you know, he's had a long career. I think he's 37 now, and good luck to him. He deserves his rest now. Yeah,
yeah, Donald, it's funny. Like, when people used to criticise Ronan O'Gara's defence, I used to say, well, he's not there to defend. He's there to kick goals and he's there to run a back line. And, you know, Mike Ross, you could say, as Mike said, he's not the quickest guy in the world by any means, but he was there to hold up the scrum. And at the one point, we didn't have anybody else who could do that.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, in terms of defence, you rarely saw him exposed even at international level. I mean, there's a lot of teams, they try and create mismatches against players like him, but he was never found wanting in that area. You know, when you talk about John Hayes and Mike Ross, between them, they manned the tight head prop side of the scrum for Ireland for 16 years, which is incredible.
Yeah,
I think Mike Ross is also a bit of a poster boy for players who don't come through the academies, who don't get the opportunities when they're 20 or 21. I mean, I remember him well playing here in Cork when he was with UCC, when he was with Cork Con. He was a very solid player. I remember he didn't help himself one summer. He went to America for about 3 months and he came back about 3 stone overweight.
And we all do that.
About December. Well, you don't have to hold up the scrum. That's the difference. But he came back about 2 or 3 stone overweight and that set him back. But I can remember at the time also Munster had these sort of scrum schools, and they were picking and putting fellas into it who just didn't have the basic size, in my view, to ever make it at the top representative level. Whereas Ross had that even at that early stage, but needed, you know, a bit probably more strength and conditioning and fitness work. The system, I think, failed him down here in Munster. He went away and I admire him because he took himself off to Harlequins. I think the first contract he got, you know, was certainly they paid him peanuts in comparison to what other tight end props would have been getting. But he, I mean, in the end, Dean Richards, who was coach of Harlequins at the time, he was almost the first player that he put down on his team sheet.
Yeah.
So Ross deserves a huge amount of credit. I mean, to get, what is it, 63 caps, you know, when you just get offered your first professional contract at 27 years of age, it shows you just how dedicated he was. He's a very intelligent guy. He worked on his game. He knew what he had to do. And he's had an absolutely brilliant career. So he will be missed. And you know, I personally was delighted to see a lot of the Leinster players, the Johnny Sextons of this world, coming out and acknowledging what he offered Leinster and the role that he played in them winning three Heineken Cups.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And when you consider, as you said, like 16 years between himself and John Hayes, and neither of them really suffering too many injuries, which was just Ireland's blessing, really. Okay, we'll move on to the fixtures this weekend then, because a couple of interesting games and standout games. You know, Leinster have already qualified and they host Glasgow, so not really worth going through that because they have a home semi-final guaranteed. Munster travel to Benetton Treviso, and if they win there, they will get their home semi-final, which, as Donal said, was massive. But you look at Ulster having to travel to the Ospreys, Michael, which I think Ospreys at the moment have the second best defensive record in the league. Mm. Not a place that you want to have to go to, having to win to make the last four. It's going to be tough.
It's going to be very tough. You know, I remember my years travelling to the Ospreys and the Liberty Stadium. It wasn't a kind place for us. It's a tough place to go. Football pitch, fast running, which will suit Ulster. But I mean, the 1 point behind Ospreys right now, it's been a not the best of seasons for Ulster so far. There's a few elements to that. They need to try and do something to get this win, because you know, next year they're obviously preparing for next year, and the likes of John O'Gibbs coming in will give them that mettle. But it's going to be a tough place to go, and obviously the Ospreys having a few Lions there. Whether they'll be selected, I'm not sure. But whatever, they all seem to churn out these players in the Ospreys, and these kind of conditions at this time of the year, it can be a long day running around chasing the Ospreys. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think, Donal, is it fair to say like this is all about how Ulster set up their game management here, and if they can try and contain the Ospreys from that style that Michael has just mentioned there. You know, when you go to Swansea and the Liberty Stadium, you know what you're in for, which is a really fast paced game. But I mean, what do you reckon of Ulster's chances this weekend?
It's a difficult one. I mean, Ulster, they've had a good run of late, but in the key games, they always seem to let themselves down. Ospreys were flying at one stage, but, I think they lost away to Treviso, and they lost to Cardiff and Leinster, so they've backed themselves into a corner. But they have the players, and playing at home, I think they do have a huge advantage there. The way that they play, they are very difficult to contain. They're strong up front. They've got a very good back row. Potential Lions halfbacks in Reece Webb and Dan Bigger, and huge pace in the back three. So I think it's going to be a difficult one for Ulster. It's the same problem all year. I mean, they have difficulties in the front five. They have a load of marquee names in the back line, but they haven't always delivered. And I think, Certainly, Charles Piatow, who was flying at one stage in the season, he looked way off the pace against Munster a couple of weeks ago in Thomond Park. They need all their players firing. It's hugely important to get into the top four, not only, obviously, to make the semi-finals, but also it has a bearing on where you end up in your draw for next year's Champions Cup. Yeah. And that's been a problem for Ulster in recent seasons. They've always been in very difficult pools in the Champions Cup and find it difficult to advance. So it's a huge game. I do think John O'Gibbs is a massive appointment for Ulster, but the onus is on the players to deliver. But you have to think it's going to be a very difficult one.
Well, regular updates on Saturday Sport on RT Radio 1 this weekend. It's a 3 o'clock kickoff there. Michael Corcoran and former Ospreys coach Sean Holly are going to be there for Saturday Sport, so you'll be able to keep in touch with what's going on. A massive game. Donal, I read your piece in the Examiner yesterday about, I suppose, the IRFU's treatment of the club game. And, you know, it's quite poignant, really, ahead of this weekend when we do have the Bateman Cup final between Corcoran and Belvedere. It's an Anglesey Road live coverage on RT television. But the times and the fixtures last weekend of what were crucial playoff games, Cork Connacht obviously at Lansdowne and Clontarf coming through their matches as well, you know, it just didn't do the club game any favour whatsoever in a time when really they need all the support that they can get.
Yeah, look, I think personally I'm fed up with the lip service that's paid to the clubs. Division 1A, the quality of the rugby in that league is totally underestimated. I mean, you see some fantastic contests week in, week out. Mm-hmm. The top four, you had points differential separating Lansdowne, Clontarf, Young Munster all finished the league on 53 points. Cork Connacht were in fourth place, 1 point behind on 52. Incredibly competitive. Two semi-finals. To have both of them on at the same time that Leinster were playing Claremont in the Champions Cup semi-final, given that both semi-finals were being hosted in Dublin, you know, was a disaster, really. Then you had the other issue with the B&I Cup being played on Friday night. You know, Munsters were down 4 or 5 players, as were some of the other clubs who had playoffs over the weekend. But again, it's just there seems to be a disregard for the club game. And these players put in massive amounts of effort. And there's a lot of academy players and development players who need the clubs to give them exposure, to give them game time. And I just think the clubs and indeed Ulster Bank as sponsors of the league, they just deserve more.
Yeah, they do. And Michael, it just seems to me like the RFU or, you know, even the provinces and their relationships with the clubs are missing a trick here, because the standard, as Donal said, Division 1A and Division 1B, we've seen the path has been there for so many players to go from playing regular top-level club rugby into a provincial setup and actually more than able to hold their own.
Yeah, I mean, if you take Connacht, for example, there's three glaring examples of showing that players, if they excel in club rugby, can make it. Matt Healy,
Craig Ronaldson,
Niad Olakan and Craig Ronaldson, and three guys who two have gone on to get caps. So it's, you know, there is a gateway there, but it's obviously very difficult. But you know, hearing Donald speak there, I've seen a couple of games and the standard is fantastic. It is at a really high level, and the conditioning, everything about the way the games are analysed, it sets you up in a mini professional organisation.
We've spoken to Mike Rullock here, and he's the coach of Lansdowne, and he said, look lads, I'm telling you now, these guys are professional in everything but name, and that's the commitment that is required to play at that level.
Yeah, definitely. And as I said, those three guys shown it can be done, and they're actually, you know, profiting from professional exposure now.
Yeah.
But it just seems like no one's really on the same hymn sheet there.
Well, Donal, I know you were delighted a couple of weeks ago when Grace Does won their last match in Dr. Hickey Park to go up to Division 2A. So it won't be long before we're back in the top flight. Do you have fond memories of going there with Con back in the day, I presume?
I have indeed. We used to always stay overnight, which was a help.
But
nowadays, the team stay the night before, or even worse because of the new motorway from Cork to Dublin. It's up and down in the coach in the day.
Yeah.
But I mean, look, the landscape in rugby has changed so much in the last 25 years. Clubs who, you know, a lot of clubs have fallen down the divisions. You have a lot of provincial clubs and have risen up and through the system that's there. So I think club rugby, the fanaticism, even, you know, I was reading there about Tullow and Sean O'Brien's involvement in the Towns Cup, with them winning the Towns Cup for the first time. And, you know, there's huge passion for club rugby in Ireland. And I just think that's not recognised at times. I understand, look, the RFU, their focus is on the professional game. But there is a pathway there. And there's a huge role played by clubs, which isn't always recognised. And, you know, as we come to the business end of the season, I just thought it was unfortunate, as we said, that two showpieces, two great games, having them on television, you know, having them on the same time as the Leinster game is on television, just seemed daft to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Okay. Look, I think that about wraps it up for the RT Rugby podcast for this week. Coverage, by the way, of the Bateman Cup final between Old Belvedere and Cork Con is at 12:45 on Saturday afternoon from Anglesey Road. Live updates on Saturday Sport, as I mentioned as well. Ulster's game in Swansea against the Ospreys from 3 o'clock there. Thanks very much for listening. My thanks to Michael Swift as well. We'll do it again. And to Donal Lennon. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks very much.
The RTE Rugby Podcast.